The Tito's handmade vodka was ice cold, condensation trickling down the copper metal shaker. It's gotta be fresh lime, they drawled. Tart, but balanced. They weren't normally this finicky about cocktail hour, but with Tito's, it had to be perfect. Simple syrup, the final ingredient. The sound of shaking filled the room to the brim. For the perfect pour at next week's book club, try the Tito's Gim Literature. Find the recipe at titosvodka.com. 40% alcohol by volume, namely 80 proof, crafted to be savored responsibly.
Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Since 1983, Eddie Trunk has been the voice for fans of rock, hard rock, and heavy metal. A best-selling author, host of TV's That Metal Show, and seven national radio shows, including Trunk Nation, daily on Sirius XM.
Interesting.
Eddie offers the world his news-making interviews, passionate analysis, honest commentary, and who knows what else. So welcome to the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Welcome, everybody. It's Eddie Trunk, and it's time for another edition of the Eddie Trunk Podcast, which is new every Thursday, podcast1.com, and, of course, Apple Podcasts as well. Hope you guys are doing well and you had a great week, and it's great to have you on board for another episode wherever you're listening around the world. Thank you for doing so. Remember, if you're listening in the U.S. or Canada, you could be listening to me every day talking rock and talking to a wide variety of rock artists and taking your calls. It all happens on Trunk Nation, my daily radio show on Sirius XM volume channel 106. Hear it live daily, 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern time, replaying every night, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern, and on demand anytime you want on the Sirius XM app. The interviews you hear on this podcast are just a tiny, tiny sample of what goes on a daily basis on Trunk Nation. So if you're not already a listener and on board on Sirius XM, please be sure to come on board. You will not regret it. We have a good time on that show each and every day, taking your calls and talking rock and dissecting and debating all things rock. Getting ready for a week in Los Angeles next week as I get ready to head west to do some shows from the Sirius XM studios in LA. Brand new studio they have out there. We'll see how that goes. Some big guests being booked. It should be a lot of fun. Also, that week finishes out by me hosting Sammy Hagar's High Tide Beach Party, the second year for Sammy's now annual festival, happening in Huntington Beach, California. A wide variety, a very eclectic variety of music artists performing. A lot of rock and hard rock, but some not hard rock artists performing as well. But it's a real nice scene on the beach. 2 days this year, Saturday and Sunday. Coming up next weekend, not this weekend, but next weekend. So if you're headed to High Tide, I will see you there and look forward to it. Always a good time there in Southern California and a great, great setting for a music festival right on the beach in Huntington Beach. Also coming up, we have Exit 111 in Tennessee. And also coming up is the Megadeth Cruise, the Mega Cruise, and really important and pressing news to share with you about that right now, because you only have a matter of days if you're listening to this on post day to possibly enter. But I'm giving away some free cabins on board the Mega Cruise that features Lamb of God, Anthrax, Testament, Overkill, countless more. And I've got some free cabins up for grabs. If you'd like to enter to win a free cabin, now the cruise sails from Los Angeles, so you need to be able to get to LA on your own, but the cabin, and if you know anything about cruising, you know food is included on the cruise. It's a great, great opportunity to come on board. Go to my website. That's where I'm doing the contest, eddietrunk.com. When you're there, find the contest tab, hit it, and the info to enter is there on the site. It's very, very time sensitive, though. because I'm going to be announcing the winners on Monday, because needless to say, we need to give people some time to be able to make their travel to get to and from LA so they can get on the ship. So go to eddietrunk.com, find the contest tab, find the page. All the information is there. Enter, and I'll be announcing very soon if you're lucky enough to have a comp cabin for two on board this epic metal sailing event. It's all there for you, all the information to enter the contest on eddietrunk.com on the contest tab. And information about the cruise itself is at megacruise.com. Good luck on that. Hope to see you guys on board. Full listing of all my appearances also right there on the homepage of the website. And be sure to follow on Twitter and Instagram at Eddie Trunk. Hey, make sure, I got to make sure that I tell you guys about Arm & Hammer Cloud Control Cat Litter. I've got two cats myself. Very, very important in your life. You know that if you have any pets, whether they be cats, dogs, whatever you have, you love them, you care about them. Got to get both of my cats' teeth fixed. Cost thousands of dollars. I don't love that. But you know what I do love? Having cats in your life. You know, their personality, they're fun. They're awesome pets. They're easy to deal with for the most part, outside of when you got to bring them to the vet. So those are all the good things. But what you don't love is cleaning up after cats and cleaning up the litter box, which is why Arm & Hammer created new Cloud Control Litter. No cloud of nasties when you scoop. It's 100% dust-free. That is super important. Free of heavy perfumes. You or the cat don't want to be breathing in perfumes or dust. It helps reduce airborne dander from scooping. So what happens in the litter box stays in the litter box. New Cloud Control Cat Litter by Arm & Hammer. More power to you and to your cats. On the Eddie Trunk Podcast, we have a double dip this week. Two guitar legends, two masters at their instruments. One widely known for being so and a household name, and that would be Slash. The other, a guy that just about every single guitar player respects and looks up to and is a fan of and has played in some instances on uncredited on just about everybody in the world's records over the years and is best known as the guitar player in Toto, and that would be Steve Lukather. Thought it was really interesting to put these guys together this week on the podcast because they are both considered among the top musicians at what they do. But the big, huge difference between them is one is a superstar household name, and the other is a guy that has just one of the most celebrated and respected guitar players on the planet in Steve Lukather, but not a household name anywhere near like what Slash is. So that's really interesting. Like a guy like Slash even looks up to someone like Lukather. So we will talk to both of them separately in separate interviews on this week's Eddie Trunk Podcast. Should be a lot of fun, and that is coming up in a matter of minutes. A nice long double dip for you this week, Slash followed by Lukather. Before we get to the interviews, let me tell you about Pluto TV. They're the leading free streaming television service. You can watch over 100 TV channels and thousands of movies on demand, all completely free. Pluto TV, they never even ask you for a credit card. You don't need to sign up to watch for free. Pluto TV, it's the easy and completely legal way to watch your favorite TV shows and hit movies for free. So what are you waiting for? You never pay for TV again by downloading Pluto TV. Download Pluto TV for free on all of your favorite devices today, including your phone, Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, smart TVs, PlayStation, and anywhere else you stream. So some good stuff to get into this week. Talking to Slash about upcoming Guns N' Roses shows. Of course, I'll see him at Exit 111. They actually just announced a show for this Saturday in LA. I might be able to make it there for that, fingers crossed. And finishing up his latest touring with Miles Kennedy. And of course, a Living the Dream CD, DVD, Blu-ray set that just came out, slash followed by Steve Lukather on this week's Eddie Trunk podcast. Again, all courtesy of my daily radio show on Sirius XM. Once again, I want to thank Arm & Hammer, who created new cloud control litter, for sponsoring today's episode. There's no cloud of nasties when I scoop, 100% dust-free, free of heavy perfumes, and helps reduce airborne dander from scooping. So what happens in the litter box stays in the litter box. New Cloud Control Cat Litter by Arm & Hammer. More power to you. Coming back, and we'll get started with Slash on the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
The Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Hey, folks, it's time to turn it up with your new favorite podcast, Expeditiously with T.I. here on Podcast One. Join the rapper, entrepreneur, family man, and activist as he bridges the gap and sheds light on important social topics and much more in an authentic, eyebrow-raising dialogue that might make you want to pull out your dictionary. Download new episodes of Expeditiously with T.I. every week on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Hey, everybody. I'm Kate Edwards.
I'm Lindsay McCormick.
And Paola Pauline.
And we are the host of the new podcast, The Next 10, on Podcast One. Our mission is to empower the voices of people who are unsure about what's going to happen next and help them figure out the steps that are coming for the next 10 years.
And I'm excited to be along on this podcast journey with these two inspiring women, sharing our stories and life lessons.
And I'm happy to inspire others and empower you. And definitely these two ladies, I have so much to learn and share with.
Subscribe and download new episodes of The Next 10 every week on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Hey, it's Eddie Trunk back with you on the podcast this week. As mentioned, Steve Lukather coming up a little bit later on. But first, this interview happened about a week ago. Slash calling in to my Sirius XM show Trunk Nation to talk about his new live collection with the Conspirators and also some Guns N' Roses activity. This interview made huge news when I asked Slash about the potential for new Guns N' Roses music. Have a listen and enjoy. How are you, brother?
Hey, man. I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. You enjoy a little downtime since the tour ended, or what?
You know how that goes. I get home from being on the road for a while, and just stuff stacks up over here. So I've been pretty busy since I got back. But it's nice to sleep in my own bed and you know all that stuff, and just be in a familiar place every day.
You know, because I was saying when we started doing those shows from the Rainbow that I do every month, you were the very first one, and that was already a little over a year ago. And I remember you had just – that was just like such a quick transition coming out of Guns and then launching Living the Dream and going out with, you know, the Conspirators. It was just such a quick turnaround, and you were pretty much gone ever since. Like, you just went.
Yeah. Well, you know, with both bands active, you know, you have to squeeze everything in. So, I mean, the Conspirators, we did a full-on world tour inside of a year so that I would be in time to do the Guns thing, which I start rehearsals for today. And then we take off at the end of the month. So, you know what I mean? You just have to sort of shoehorn everything in. But we pulled it off, you know, and it had a blast, so it's all good.
Did you notice Slash going out with the Conspirators for the first time now since you were back in Guns N' Roses? Did you notice a difference in the audience? Anything different that you picked up on? Were there people more accepting of the, because you only did Night Train really on the whole tour from Guns, were people more accepting and open to the Conspirators music? I mean, any changes you saw out there?
Yeah, well, I mean, the one thing is I didn't get any flack for not doing any gun stuff. So that was cool. And I didn't really care one way or the other. I was just, you know, we're going to do one song and that's it. But you know, I didn't get any negative feedback from that. So that was cool. The main thing that I got out of the last Conspirators run was the material on the album was really well received, and I felt like we had arrived as a band that people see as something that's actually real. Because for the longest time, Conspirators were sort of one of those hybrid things that people think will just pop in and pop out. It's just like, see it while it's around, and you know what I mean? It's a short-lived kind of project. And slowly but surely, it sort of established its place as its own band, and people start to, we've started to gather, you know, like a legion of fans. And so I think we've really arrived at a place where, you know, people have accepted it as being a real thing. And that's a great feeling because, you know, we always took it seriously from the beginning.
Well, there's a lot that goes into that, though. You worked really hard in doing that. The lineup is solidified. You've made a few records now with the lineup. And I think Living the Dream was the best of the records you've made so far with that band. So it seems like it all really peaked at the right time and all came together. And then you throw in, coming off of whatever it was, 2-3 years back in Guns N' Roses, I mean, it was just really the perfect storm, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely, you know, the great thing about it was, you know, for Living the Dream, it's definitely a progression and a forward motion. You know, like you can start out at one place and be, you know, pretty good, and then start going the other direction the more records you make. This is one of those things that has been progressing in a positive sort of forward. I don't know how best way to put it, but it's been getting better and better since it started. So that's what's great about it. And then doing the Guns thing was just really cathartic for me. I don't know how it all works for you know, Conspirators fans and Guns fans, and I'm pretty sure they sort of cross over. But for me personally, you know, getting together with Axl and Duff was just a huge thing. And then also sort of keeping the Conspirators going as well, it's just been great for me because I think it satisfies a certain workaholic nature that I have. But it's great to be teamed up with the guys that, I mean, basically where I come from, you know, sort of like, you know, the whole Guns thing is sort of my home base. And then having this relationship with Todd and Brent and Miles and Frank is something that's really strong to be able to maintain that as well. So it's really been an exciting couple of years.
Yeah, to me, it made all the sense in the world that you now, that you're back in Guns playing that stuff, that's where most of that music lives. And when you see the Conspirators, now that you've got so much great stuff under that umbrella, that you go see that band, and that's what you're going to hear live. But tell me, because we talked about this just before the tour started, and I suspected you'd do this where you'd really cut down on doing Guns with the Conspirators. But of all the songs, why did you pick Night Train? Was there any reason for that?
Well, I, you know, like when we were doing Guns material in the beginning, it was basically, you know, I was sort of when Conspirators, before it was even called the Conspirators, when it first started, it was just a solo thing. And I was sort of doing stuff from my whole sort of catalog, and that's how it started. And so obviously Guns was a big part of that. There's no particular song in the Guns catalog that's like a particular, like a significant statement on my behalf, like I'm going to do this because this is what I'm about. We're just doing Guns songs because I love doing Guns songs, you know. So now when in the Conspirators, Night Train is a good up-tempo, straightforward, you know, rock and roll song. It's doing Sweet Child of Mine sometimes is a little bit, it's just a little bit too close to home as far as Guns N' Roses is concerned. And it's a great statement for me, but I just didn't want to do that. I didn't want to do Paradise City. It's so easy, it's been done to death. You know what I mean? So Night Train was a good, well-rounded Guns N' Roses song that sort of covers all the bases.
Now, talking about
Rock of Queens, another one that we were doing for a second there.
Oh, yeah.
There's a big guitar solo in that. And I was doing a guitar solo in Wicked Stone, so I sort of took Rock of Queen out.
Slash featuring Miles Kennedy and the Conspirators, Living the Dream, a great box set that is coming out that's got the DVD, the Blu-ray, the CD. So it's a live album. It's live video. It's a great set coming out on September 20th, documenting all this stuff that we're talking about now with Slash. Slash, you talked about this tour and how well it went, but it did have a few hiccups in there because, as you know, I'm also friends with all the guys in your band, and I know that unfortunately Frank had to leave for a little bit, and then Brent, I don't know what it is with those two Canadians and their eyes, but I've emailed them, you know, I've been in touch with them busting their balls about it. It's like the detached retina thing, like what the hell is it, something in Canada or what?
My joke was that the fucking Canadians rock out so hard that their eyeballs detach. I don't know, you know, but that was one of those things that happened. I mean, every time it's ever happened, it's not something you lead up to and you're sort of warned about. It just happens suddenly, and it means emergency surgery within 24 hours. So you're faced with a decision. You know, like this spontaneous event just happens and you got to figure out what to do. So that was a little bit crazy because, you know, finding somebody to fill Brent's shoes is no easy task. And it happened. We had 2 days off before a show in Nashville. So I'm not going to mention names on who I thought of, but those guys suggested Corey. Oh, fuck. Now I forgot his name. What was the
his
name? That I feel terrible.
No, I know. It's on it. Corey ended up subbing for Frank,
Corey,
right?
Corey did the guitar part. No, yeah. And we'll get to that.
Yeah.
But
Galfus. Isn't it Galfus?
Yeah, but the first name.
Stefan?
I'm just spacing. Wait. Huh?
Was it Stefan?
Well, anyways. No.
Ed, Google it. Help.
Anyway,
tell my producer to Google it for him.
I'm looking it up right now. Hold on. But anyway, so we decided on him, you know. Hold on, it's coming. Shane, that's what I said. Okay.
Shane Gallas.
Yeah, Shane Gallas.
Right.
Yeah, Gallas. So they you know, Brenton and Frank and Todd were all like, well, no, he's really good, and we know him, and this and that, and he'll learn the stuff really quick. And so I said, okay, it's on you guys if you trust, you know. And so he came in, and he learned the entire set pretty much within a 24-hour period. He didn't have any real time. We had a few hours of rehearsal the night before the Nashville gig, and we just went in and did it, and he did a great job. So, you know, those are the kind of things that show the tenaciousness of a band, when you can survive those kind of panic calls like that and just keep going. With the with Corey filling in for Frank, Corey was amazing, and he you know, did that perfectly. But we had a little bit of forewarning because of Frank's situation. We knew in advance that it was coming, so we had it planned out. But yeah, so we got through those major emergency situations.
Yeah, I know. I got to say, man, I mean, a lot, obviously, with this band, the focus is going to be on you and Miles, as it should be. But the other three guys in your band, Frank and Brent and Todd, even the talent they see on display when they're playing with you is just actually scratching the surface, because those guys are so versatile and can do so many different things. The day after your tour ended, I was in LA and I saw Frank play just a jam at the Viper Room, and watching him play, I was just like, man, these guys can do so much. So it's really would be a tall order to able to replace
great.
Them.
They're the real deal.
Yeah.
You know, all three of them, and they, you know, and all things considered, you know, they've built up a pretty sizable fan base of their own, you know. So,
and the other thing
it's
is
not just about Miles and I,
right? But the other thing is with the vocals, like one of my hugest peeves in the world right now for the last year, which I'm on a massive campaign against, is rock bands playing to tracks, because it's like an epidemic now and it's got to stop. To me, the most un-rock and roll thing you could possibly have, and it's way too common. And then to watch this DVD, and having seen you guys play so much, and to see Miles and Todd singing and all those vocals being real and everything being 100% live, to me, man, that is so important. I give you all the props in the world for doing it like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're great. I mean, I think there's a secret ingredient to the band, which is the combo of those guys singing together. You know, and Miles is obviously, goes without saying, what a phenomenal singer he is. But then Todd came in, you know, initially he would just came in as a bass player when he and I first met. And then he started singing background vocals. And I was like, wow, this fucking guy can sing. And it's just turned into something that is a major part of the whole band sound, you know, which is cool. You know, it's cool to have a thing that's identifiable like that.
Yeah, so. It is killer. Yeah. Did you get to do, now I'm looking down the track listing for this. I love that you did Lost Inside the Girl because that's one of my favorite songs from the record. But throughout the course of the tour for Living the Dream, did you play pretty much everything from the record at some point?
Over the course of the tour, we played every single song on the record. Like in the very beginning, before we got to... I mean, the set that we did in London at Hammersmith, which is the DVD, that's just where we had arrived at as far as the set list at that point. But prior to that, we had done, you know, like Read Between the Lines was a major song in the set. There was One You Love That Is Gone was in the set for a while there.
How about Great Pretender?
The Great Pretender was the main ballad in the set during
Love
the
that song.
Section. And then we switched over to Lost Inside the Girl, and then we switched over to When You Love Is Gone. And that's sort of over the course of the tour, that's how it went. But yeah, all those songs, all the different songs that aren't on the actual DVD, yeah, made an appearance in the set for short periods all throughout the tour.
It is. It's awesome, man. I didn't know I was going to be talking to you today until like just before I left the house, and I got the DVD.
I found out yesterday.
Yeah, and I got the DVD over the weekend, and I was busy watching my Giants shit the bed, and I was so depressed I didn't watch anything over the weekend, and then I was just like they called me today, so I popped it in for literally 20 minutes as I was walking out of the house to come to the studio. But from what I watched of it, there's some extra stuff. There's like a little documentary thing in there. And then the live performance is shot and sounds so good. It's really an awesome package. And I know you've done this before. And it seems like the last live record or two was also in England. Am I correct on that?
The last one was in Stoke, actually,
right.
If I remember correctly. And because that was my hometown. It was the first time I'd been back there in 40 years, and the only time I've ever played there, obviously. And so that was sort of cool. Yeah, and then we just picked Hammersmith this time. You know, because I think it just seemed like a good place to do it. Hammersmith got a great legacy, and I didn't even think about two records both being done in England. It just seemed like a good place to do it at that time when we decided, okay, let's do a live record somewhere in this area, you know, while we're here in Europe.
And there is that one at the Roxy, too, that I just remembered that you did on one of the tours.
That was the first one, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I love live records, man. And like you, we're around the same age. I mean, we grew up with Strangers in the Night and At Budokan and Live Bootleg and Kiss Alive and all this stuff.
They were
landmark records, man. I still love live records.
Yeah. No, it's a major thing for me because when I first started really getting into rock and roll for myself, you know, because I was raised on it and my parents had listened to great music and I was always around it. But when I got to be a teenager and started really identifying with my own bands and all that kind of stuff, I didn't have any money. And so if I ever did invest in a record of a band that I didn't have any of their albums, let's say, I would always go for the live record because to me that was the most indicative of a rock and roll band, of what a rock and roll band's metal was. You know what I mean? Like it was live, the energy was there, all the songs that you know, it's sort of like a greatest hits package. And that was how I identified with bands. And if I liked the live record, then I would go get the rest of the studio records. So I'm all about live stuff. But that went away, you know.
Yeah.
That was like a big thing in the end of the 60s and through the 70s. By the end of the 70s, beginning of the 80s, live records just went away. And so, you know, and now if you do hear of a live record, it's basically a studio record with an audience sort of tagged on. It's so overproduced. So, you know, I like to put out these things that haven't been doctored at all. All the mistakes are on there. You know, I mean, for this particular record, I mean, I only listened to a handful of songs just to make sure the mix was right, and that was it.
Yeah, and that's the way it should be, though, man. Whether it's seeing a band live or listening to a live thing, I mean, warts and all, that's what's what the beauty of live is.
Yeah, I mean, and I think people appreciate it because the humanity's there, you know, and that's what people are attracted to in rock and roll anyway, which is one of the funniest things about rock and roll nowadays, because it's so doctored up that one of the reasons why people are a little bit confused is because there is the human element's been erased, and that's why people don't identify with it like they did back in the day, because there's a certain human interaction that is completely eliminated. But you know, I think kids are starting to pick up on that.
Hey, along your, it looked like on your back line while I was watching the DVD, like I said, I only had chance to watch like 3-4 songs before I had to leave. But it looked like you had like, was it figurines or dolls or something lined up there?
There's all kinds of toys and stuff on top of the amps. It's something I think someone gave me. I remember exactly. Actually, it was a stuffed brontosaurus or something, a green plushy brontosaurus. I put it on top of a cabinet. I think it was on top of one of the Marshalls. And then slowly but surely more stuff ended up going and it became a thing. So now I got all kinds of fucking like monsters and dinosaur toys and stripper dolls and whatnot up there.
You got a wrangler just that has to set that up for you and take it down every night?
Craig is working for me. Adam was doing it for a while, and Adam's gone, at least right now. And then I got this guy, Craig, who used to work for Richard Fortas, and now he's working for me. And so there's two boxes. We have two rigs, right, that travel simultaneously. So we have, like, if we have gear in Europe, we have another rig that's over in the States. So if we pop back and forth. And so I've got a box for each rig that's filled with toys, and they just throw them up there.
And it looked like you were wearing a pretty badass, like, retro. Was that an Ozzy Blizzard of Oz album cover shirt you're wearing?
It's a Blizzard of Oz shirt, yeah.
And then later on in the bonus features, you got an awesome retro Aerosmith shirt too, man. Those were great.
I haven't seen the actual bonus features.
Well, you're wearing like an old, an old Aerosmith Get Your Wings shirt or something. I was like, man, those are really cool. There's no way those are originals.
No, I bought a shitload of fucking old rock and roll t-shirts from a company called Madewarn, and they've just got these great sort of distressed t-shirts. Some of them are original, some of them aren't. Well, they're all based on original art, but I don't know how he goes about doing this. He's got a process. But some of them are actually original, and some of them are reprints, I guess. But they're really, really fucking cool.
The originals of those things, the originals for those things go for huge money too. Like if you, like
yeah,
if
some
you
of
have them,
them
sitting
some
around,
of them are worth a lot of money.
It's ridiculous. It's crazy. Hey, so let me ask you this. Where do things go from here? You said you're starting, like, I'm, by the way, that festival you guys are playing, Guns N' Roses is playing in Tennessee, Exit 111, I'm hosting that, so I can't wait for that. I know you guys are headlining the last day. So it's going to be great, because
I
haven't seen you in a while.
Anything I'd see there.
Yeah, for sure. But, so obviously you're starting up with Guns, and I know there's, I guess, Austin City Limits. I mean, some big festivals, a couple Vegas shows. So give us the update on what's next here.
Well, we're just doing this one run in the States and a couple dates in Mexico, end of this month into November. And so that's it for Guns for now, and I think we have something coming up in March as far as touring is concerned. But then, you know, obviously everybody knows that we're sort of working on new material, which is really exciting, and so that's really primarily what the focus is.
Well, so there's a lot of people, there's speculation, and you know there's always speculation.
There's nothing in the Terminator movie, by the way.
That's what I was going to ask you. So it's nothing to do with Terminator.
These rumors, they take off, and then they get a life of their own, and you're just like, you can't reel them in. They just sort of, they sort of like, get tossed around in the wind, and anyway, but so there's nothing in there. In that.
Now, Duff has been out with his own record, and he was in Europe, I know, and he's been touring, supporting that. So, where are you at with Guns N' Roses' new music? Are you all working individually? Has everybody gotten together? I mean, song, an album? Where are you at?
I have nothing to tell you information wise, other than no, it's not that. Well, Everybody's been sort of like, when we're in town, working on it, and then when we're out of town, obviously not. So it's been that kind of thing.
All right, and I know you probably can't say a lot about this, so I'm not going to press you on it, but let me just ask you this finally. Would you like to do a full new Guns N' Roses album? Or, you know, we're in this world now where some people feel, oh, you do an EP or you just throw a new song out there. I know you. You're old school, man. You're like me. You like to make albums. But ultimately, would that be your preference? Or what, when it comes to finally putting out new music from Guns, which will be highly anticipated, what would you like to see it be?
I think at the end of the day, everybody wants to have a full album released. I don't think that's really changed all that much. But, you know, there's a different way of putting stuff out initially nowadays, more so than – I mean, there's always been the single, but now you sort of look at that sort of preliminary release a little bit differently now. All things considered, it's like the Wild West out there. It's like, you know, there is no formula for any of it. You know, I haven't seen any sort of routine kind of thing that sort of works. I mean, you can sort of do any one of a million different things to releasing a record. But at the end of the day, I think that we will ultimately release a full album.
You know what's amazing, man? You talk about it being the Wild West and people don't know what to do. Here's what's funny about that. You're so right, because nobody knows what to do. Nobody knows what's what. Everyone will tell you people don't buy albums. People only stream. They don't buy CDs, whatever. So I'm sure you know this, but today it was announced, or over the weekend, that Taylor Swift was knocked out of the number one spot on the sales charts by the new Tool album, which is 88 minutes long. They didn't do vinyl. There's only CD. And it's the average song length is like 12 minutes a song, and it's the number one album in the country, and it knocked out Taylor Swift.
Right. I did not know that, but good for them.
I mean, that's unbelievable.
That's
when you
cool.
think about it. Like, so people, like, there really are no rules. It's like anything goes.
I mean, there's definitely no rules. I mean, I think when it really comes down to it, it's a matter of perception. And, you know, obviously the Tool release has been something that everybody's been talking about and has been hyped up and so on and so forth. And that's how it manages to do that. And that's just getting people's attention and getting people excited about something. You know what I mean? And it's not the easiest thing to do, but Tool definitely managed to pull that off. You know, same with Slipknot, for that matter.
Yeah.
And it's great because, you know, it draws a lot of these sort of anti-rock and roll people to attention, and they go, oh, you know.
Yeah.
And I love that. So, yeah. So it's cool.
So do I, yeah. On Guns N' Roses, with the live shows coming up, I know you didn't start rehearsals yet, but is it basically going to be more or less like the same sort of set and what you guys have done in the past, or for these shows are you working up some different things?
There's a couple different things that we're talking about doing that are sort of in the works to do, what we're planning on doing. So I'll just leave it at that.
Okay. Well, listen, man, I don't want to hold you too long. I could talk to you forever. I appreciate the time. September 20th, Slash featuring Miles Kennedy and the Conspirators, Living the Dream. You get you get every format in one box. You get the CD, so you got audio only. You got the DVD. You got the Blu-ray. You got a cool booklet, full concert, some extra features in there. It's really, really cool. I can't wait to get through the whole thing as soon as I have a little more time this week. Last thing. You talked about how much you love live records, and I do too. Can you give me give me anywhere from 3 to 5 of your favorite live records of all time?
Okay. My favorite live record of all time is Aerosmith Live Bootleg.
Because it's really live, by the way, which is even more crazy.
Yeah, that was the template for me as far as live records were concerned, you know, that kind of thing.
And hold on, before you go any further, like, this is what's crazy about that. Because you and I are, like, I've gone to 2 Aerosmith shows already on this residency, like, crazy Aerosmith fans. I got to tell you, man, I don't think Bootleg gets enough credit. For, like, when you talk about the great live records of all time, it usually doesn't come up, and it should, because it really is that great, and it actually is live. It's made up out of, like, bootleg recordings. It's awesome. I just listened to the live Train Kept a Rollin' the other day, with Strangers in the Night at the end, and then the fireworks going off and over the overhead mics, because people used to do that back then. It puts you,
right.
That album, maybe more so than any 70s live record, actually puts you in that time and space. At least it does for me.
Yeah, well, I mean, each song has its own personality because it's its own venue, right? It's its own. It's not like an entire tour. Every show is from a different concert, and it just has that sort of that in the moment kind of flavor to it. And it's always, I mean, when I was, I don't know, I must have first picked that record up when I was like 15 or 16 years old, and it was just, that was indicative of fucking heavy hard rock, loud hard rock live,
so
performed live to me. You know, anyway, so that record, Get Your Yayas Out from the Stones, mm-hmm. live, Budokan, Cheap Trick, the Queen live, and was it live?
Live Killers.
I forgot what it was called.
Killers.
Yeah, Killers record.
Yeah.
And then the Thin Lizzy Live Dangerous is another one. And then UFO, Strangers of the Night. I mean, there was a handful of fucking really great ones for the particular bands that I liked at the time. Yeah. I loved Live Gonzo. Ted Nugent.
Yeah, super underrated.
Yeah, I could sort of sit here and name great live records from that period for a while.
Yeah, and of course, Frampton Comes Alive. Peter's out there doing his farewell tour now.
It is. I listened to, you know, I mean, the voice box stuff for me, you know, I never got into that record because at the time I was never a big Peter Frampton fan. So I didn't get into that particular live record until way later.
Yeah.
But that's another good one. And that was obviously the one that sort of kickstarted the platinum live albums in the 70s.
Yeah, it really was. And I'll tell you what, man, this new one that you've put out is really, really killer. Everybody check it out. It's out on September 20th. You got the video, you got the audio. Imagine if we could have video of all those concerts you just talked about. If back then
shot
them. I think about that all the time.
I know. It would be fucking killer. I know. The business might be pretty screwed up at this point in time, but there is some stuff that rock fans have now that we didn't have back then that I would have been so fucking jealous of. You know, that's one of them. You know, you can just go on YouTube and find all these live shows and stuff like that, which we, you know, we had to scrape and claw to find a live recording, let alone any kind of videotape.
Yeah. Well, I'm really optimistic about the future of rock right now. I think there's some great, really great new young bands on the cusp. You've actually had some open for you. Your Guns has some coming up. I mentioned that on social media the other day. I think it's incredibly cool that you guys are taking, you know, these newer bands, whether it's Joyous Wolf or Dirty Honey or Tyler Bryant.
Yeah.
All these guys, I mean, these guys are really, really good bands and good musicians. And so many of these tours these days, it's like co-headlines, it's packages and sheds. There's not really a lot of opportunity for these younger bands to get in front of a big audience. So for Guns and yourself to be taking some of these guys, you're definitely doing a great service there, I think.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's some great bands, and you got to get them, you know. I mean, I just want to play with a band that I really like, for one. I mean, it just makes for a greater overall show in general. But also just getting, being, you know, and it's exciting for me to hear really great young bands, because it's like, that's the shot in the arm that I need, right?
Yeah.
And so if you can get them out there and you know, people are seeing them, it gets the word of mouth going, and it's just all around pretty fucking exciting.
Yeah. All right, man, listen.
That's my belief.
Yeah, well, I agree.
Eddie, I know. Now we're just rambling. But listen, I'll see you at some point in October in Tennessee. And then, but just have a good one. And,
yeah, man.
Until then.
Well, I might be in L.A. before that, so I'll hit you up if you're free. Otherwise, I'll see you at Exit 111.
Okay, cool.
All right, man.
All right, have a good one, man. I'll talk to you later.
Thanks. Cheers. See ya. There he goes. Slash, everybody. Thanks to Slash. Always great to talk to him, an old friend, and great to have him on the show as always. Look forward to seeing him with Guns N' Roses at Exit 111, which I am hosting in Manchester, Tennessee, coming up very, very soon. Coming up next, another guitar great, Steve Lukather, right after this on the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Don't miss the Jordan Harbinger Show on Podcast One.
You know, like if you're nervous or scared about a situation, instead of being like, nah, there's nothing to be scared about, nothing to be scared about, oh, shit, there is.
This week, Jordan joins former Laker great and Oscar winner Kobe Bryant for an unforgettable conversation that you don't want to miss.
You own it, you give it a hug, you embrace it, and now what are you going to do about it?
Check out the Jordan Harbinger Show every week on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Welcome back. Eddie Trunk here. The double dip that I mentioned this week, two interviews. This one is from a guy that is one of the most celebrated and respected guitar players in the world, has literally played with everyone on everyone's record. At the time we did this interview, he dropped by my SiriusXM show and was currently touring with Ringo Starr. Always a lot of fun to talk to Luke, better known as Steve Lukather. Here he is on the Eddie Trunk podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, it's now time for the Gospel According to Luke. He is here.
Yeah, man. What's
Steve
up,
Steve Lukather in the house.
What's going on,
Good to see you, man.
Good to see you again. I was really tweaked that you wanted me to come on.
Of course,
today,
man. I loved having you on. And we only got to know each other in the last year or two.
Yeah,
and
man.
Then we, it's like so long overdue.
I saw you in L.A. So
We did some stuff in L.A. But I had gotten calls for you about you for years, like, you know, ask Luke about this. And he played on this and this and that. And then your book came out. We did some stuff. The book is called The Gospel According to Luke.
Yeah,
if you don't have it, get it.
They signed me up for another one. Probably going to be called The New Testament.
Are you doing another one for real?
I was in the U.K. with my band, and I met with the publisher. They go, it's been really successful, so might want to do another one.
Good.
This is the one I get even with everybody now. I'm just kidding. I was nice the first time.
You were nice. And you kind of said that, right? It's been a little while since I read the book.
Yeah, no, come on.
But you said that up front. You're like, look, you know, this isn't going to be that kind of book.
Yes, well, thanks to the joys of litigation, I have a few people I like to punch in the face. So. Oh, no, I'm not an ugly guy. I don't want it to be like that guy.
Well, the only thing in the book, you talk about your own demons in the book, which.
Yeah, I'm my own worst enemy, but I'm good. I feel great now. I'm happy.
You look great, man.
Well, not bad for 150 years old.
Come on.
Thanks.
So you're out with Ringo now, right?
Yeah, I am.
You guys played here in New York last night?
Yeah, we played last night. It was a great gig. We had a blast looking out at the Manhattan skyline, and behind us was the river. It was a beautiful venue.
I haven't been there yet. It's a pier, I think, Pier something.
Pier 17.
Pier 17,
yeah.
And I hear it's an amazing venue.
Yeah,
it's relatively new.
Yeah.
And everybody said that it's great. I just haven't been out there yet. Was it hot?
It was weird because there was a rain and thunder and lightning, and then it just kind of went away. So it was really humid but warm, but at the same time, it calmed down a little bit. It was almost perfect because there was a little breeze. And
that's nice because, I was telling you off the air, I hosted a show with Tom Kiefer on Saturday in Houston.
And he's great.
And the night before, his band played in Dallas, and they didn't know going in that it was an outdoor show. Outdoors, Dallas in August, he said he almost died.
Oh, because the heat.
Over 100 degrees.
It can be brutal. We did a gig with Ringo once somewhere, and the stage was facing the sun. And it was already 100 and something degrees. And like right here in the middle of my forehead, it felt like it was a magnifying glass on an ant. You know what I mean? I was like, help me. They were bringing out ice cold towels and everybody.
It's no joke, though. I mean, especially you get older, you know, it's no joke to mess around with that heat.
You had to bring up the age thing.
No, not even talking about you. Ringo's got a few years on you.
Hey, he's an anomaly. He's an amazing human. He's good. He's 79 years old, running around, jumping jacks, playing the drums, funny as hell. And, you know, that's the way to get old, man. It's like, you know, older, I should say. I can't say he's old because he's not old spirit, you know?
How long have you played with him?
7+ years. I'm coming back next year for 8. I want to be like the longest running guy in the band. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
I told him he had to kill me to get rid of me. We become great friends. He's an unbelievably cool person.
I interviewed him once.
Did you?
Yep. It was for TV. Uh-huh. It was probably around 2000, I want to say 6, 7.
Okay.
And I did an hour with him on TV for a show I was doing on VH1 Classic at the time, before I was doing that metal show. Mm-hmm. And he came in, and this is the thing I remember about the whole thing, is he came in, and the guy who was running the channel at the time put out this big mandate, like, hey, he's going to come in, everybody in position, be professional, do your gig, no photos, no asking for autographs, let him get in and out, no, you know, be comfortable. I respect all that, okay, sure. No problem. So everybody on the crew, myself, we all played by that rule. So Ringo comes in off the elevator. Who's the one guy that comes with his wife, his kids, his mother?
Who's that?
Drumheads. The guy who made the rule, no autographs and no photos.
Ah, you're kidding me.
I swear to God.
Oh, that sucks, man.
You son of a bitch. I will never forget that. We're like, wait a minute. What's going on here?
Wow. Yeah, he figured he'd be the one guy in the music industry, right?
Oh, like,
yeah. Well, first off, he's the nicest guy there is.
But he was super cool. And, like, that's the thing you find is, like, I can hang with anybody, and
sure,
I do.
But
what I'm saying is, I'm a fan as much as anybody of everybody. But you also know how to behave.
Wait a second, I just met Snoop Dogg in the hallway, which was
Snoop
a thrill.
Was here?
Yeah, which was a thrill for me. I saw him, Snoop. I shook. He was real sweet. Shook my hand. I went. You know, I wanted to hang out with him. You know?
Now, you've played on everybody's record. Did you ever play on a
Snoop record?
No, you don't know about
it. No, you know, no, man.
But you could have cut that deal right in the hallway,
no,
man.
No, I didn't,
a little
man.
Rocked up guitar on a Snoop record.
No, he kind of looked at me like, hey, man, like this. And like, he had these gigantic, you know, sweet but big guys that, like, you know, don't mess with Snoop. No, it was just great. In passing, it was like, oh, great. I can't wait to call my older kids and say, hey, dig who I met today.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm still a music fan like
but
you,
that's
man.
It, you're a fan, but you know how to hang without you freaking people out, even though inside you might be like, oh my god, because even for you, a huge Beatles guy, the fact that I'm sure even initially when you first met Ringo,
I worked with Paul first on the Thriller record with Michael Jackson, then George became a friend of mine after our sadly our drummer Jeff Beccaro passed away. He played with us at a tribute in LA with all this all-star people with Fagan and Boz and all these great
people.
So
my point is, and you played with everybody and you know everybody and everybody loves you, but seriously.
Not everybody, believe me.
A lot of people do, seriously. But the thing about that is that even no matter what of a super fan you may be of somebody, you still inside are kind of like, okay, I got to do this professionally. For you being a guy that made your career doing so many sessions, have you ever been in that situation?
A lot of times.
Just like, you're playing it cool on the exterior, but inside you're like, holy
shit. I was
shit.
Four feet away from Aretha Franklin cutting live tracks, and she was singing live and playing the piano with a full live band, a great band. Aretha Marr was producing. And when somebody's that good, it's almost distracting. I'm trying to look at the chart and play this. You know, it wasn't all written out. We came up with our own parts and stuff pretty much, mostly. But she's so good, she'd go for a lick, and you go, oh, my God, I just heard. Then you look up, and you go, oh, where am I on the chart?
So
I
was that one of the biggest, like, Lukather holy
shit
moments?
I got a million of them.
Give me a couple more.
Well, Paul McCartney walks there, and Michael Jackson, you're sitting with Quincy Jones producing, George Martin's there, Jeff Emmerich. I mean, it's a whole team of, like, my whole childhood fantasy living right there. There are moments you just keep cool. I mean, Springsteen came in and played with us once with Quincy. I've worked with just about all of my heroes. You
is
know?
There anyone that you haven't worked with yet that you would love to?
Well, I met him in Hong, but Peter Gabriel's one, you know. I've always, you know, I come from that whole, I love Genesis in the 70s when I was in high school and stuff like that. So all those guys, Phil and all those guys, I'm going to work with them. They don't need me. They got other people. You know, I'm not trying to take anybody's gig, but I always want to play on a Steely Dan record. I know this isn't really your audience at all, but
that's okay.
I grew up, you know, our drummer, Jeff, was in Steely Dan when we were in high school. That's how we got into that whole studio musician thing.
Right.
It was like, wow, that's something interesting before the whole punk thing and even before the term metal came into be. I mean, I got Machine Head by Deep Purple and Richie Blackmore changed my life. I mean, and I got to play that with Ian on this all-star thing in Germany, so I got to play the opening of Smoke on the Water, and I played it right.
With
most
Ian
people,
Pace?
No. Ian Gillan.
Ian Gillan.
Yeah.
Okay.
I played with Ian Pace, too. He actually called me and asked me to work on his solo album he's going to be doing.
That guy's crazy. That guy's been, I mean, still plays amazingly, and he's like in it well into his 70s.
Well,
I toured with Purple in Mexico late last year.
Oh, Steve Morris, one of the great
guitarists. Steve Morris, amazing, but it's incredible. They keep talking about ending and retiring, but I'm like, guys, look, I'm the first person to tell somebody you're staying too long at the party, it's time to go.
No,
if you
listen,
can't cut it. But they're still great.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. I mean, you know, it's not like we have a job we hate when retiring. You know, you retire from a job you hate.
Right.
Sitting in traffic and going, I hate my life. I'm counting down to the end. And musicians don't do that. You know, if they have any longevity at all, you just keep playing. Unless, you know, sadly, sometimes you get hurt and you can't really play anymore, whether it's arthritis or whatever.
No, we were talking off the air about people who have had ailments and issues, hearing and what have you.
Oh, yeah, my hearing's beat down.
I was going
to
ask you.
I was talking to Brad Whitford about it. He said, well, I got this thing that's helping. Because I haven't heard silence since 1986.
You got the ringing?
Oh, yeah. Triple D above middle C. And what the ringing is, your brain generates...
Tinnitus.
Yeah. The brain generates the tone that's a deficit. So if it's like, you know, 3 to 8K, which for you non-people, it's like your full mid-range up to the beginning of the highs, it generates the tone you're missing. The brain's trying to compensate for it, and that's what the ring is. You're not generating a tone from the inside of your body.
Right.
You can't put your fingers in your ear and make it stop. So they got this thing now that can retrain your brain that Brad was telling me about. I said, I got to get this. So he wrote it down for me.
Wow.
Because it's maddening after a while, and it doesn't get better when you get older.
It'll drive you crazy. I had a touch of it you know, I worked as a kid, where it first started with me, a really young kid, I worked in a car wash on the line of the car wash. And the last step on the line of the car wash was I would take the gun and spray the inside of the windows.
That sound, yeah.
No, no. The thing right before where I was positioned was the giant dryer. You know the thing?
Oh,
goes,
yeah.
And goes over your car and blows the water off.
It's probably 120 dB,
and
right?
And I'm standing right next to this thing for like 9 hours because I'm shooting the gun of the soap.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a kid. I didn't know. You
of course
know,
not.
Nobody had a hearing protection. Yeah. And I remember back then, and then
that'll beat you down like airplanes too. That's like a 90 to 100 dB of the same tone. You're going long distance, always wear earplugs.
Yeah, and it's just like
here we are, the metal.
No, but that's it. I mean, me growing up into going to metal shows and still do. I mean, back then it was like a macho thing. It's like, no, you're gonna don't wear plugs, man. Bullshit. I tell my audience all the time, wear plugs because you don't want that ringing. It will drive you nuts.
No, dude, I'm
do you use white noise when you sleep?
No, I managed to train myself to sleep.
Okay. Yeah,
yeah. I just your brain. I just so used to it that you have to get used to it. But I don't know what I'd do if it stopped. I think I know I'll be dead in 5 minutes at that point. You know?
Well, I'll get one last thing on this because I'll give you a little tip too because I don't know what Brad told you about and what he's using, but my friend gave me, I've never seen these before, but a friend of mine gave these to me about a year ago. They're made by Bose, and they're called Sleep Buds.
Ooh.
Now, I normally don't like stuff stuck in my ear. I don't like earbuds. I like out, like headphones,
yeah,
things.
Get it.
But these things are super comfortable. They recess.
I wear in-ears on stage because save my hearing, believe it or not.
Well, you'll have no problem wearing these.
I have no problem with that.
You put these in, and they're
I got to have this. You got to write the after the
Bluetooth.
Show.
Bluetooth. You put an app on your phone.
Uh-huh.
You select anything, you rainfall or whatever.
Wow, I got
it.
It
wirelessly goes in your head, and at the same time, it blocks out external noise. So I'm in a lot of hotels like you are.
A lot of planes,
I hate
too.
Outside
yes,
noise.
Yes, yes.
It does both, and you can program the alarm right into the app so that the alarm goes off in your head when you got to wake up.
That's a trip, man. You got to
Bose Sleep Buds. They're really cool. I'll send you the text so you can see them. So
have we bored everybody in the audience?
No, trust me. This is something people deal with. They really do. What do you got? Toto dates coming up?
Yeah, September 20th to October 20th U.S. You can see it on stevelukather.com or totoofficial.com. It's going to be our last one for the foreseeable future. We've been out for a few years, and we need a break. I don't know what's going to happen next. I mean, lawsuits have not been kind to us. We
you guys be Toto being sued or suing each other?
No, we got sued by one of our ex-members' wives.
So, really?
Oh, yeah. It was a sort of a grudge fuck thing, you know? Oh, sorry,
you can say that.
I don't want to get too deep into it because we haven't signed anything yet, but it was a pretty brutal. It's been going on for like 27 years.
Really?
Yeah, man. You know, I don't really understand it. Nobody really does, but it's caused a lot of friction in the band. We all went to school together, and I think we've been in such close quarters and working on this 40th anniversary, which has been tremendously successful. It's been our best touring years ever in terms of success financially and all the rest of it. But, you know, like I've been on the road so much. I mean, I got two little kids. I got two grown kids and I got two little kids.
How old are your youngest?
Almost 12 and 8.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, I want to be home for a little bit, you know. But, I mean, I'm still going to do other stuff and we're going to, you know, I'm going to come back and work a bunch. I mean, we'll come back at some point in some configuration. We've had 7 incarnations of the band. Mm. But that's all I really want to say about that right now. So if you want to come see us, the band's killing it right now.
And you guys do a lot of work outside of America, too, right? You do really.
Oh, yeah.
Even better business outside of the U.S.
We were headlining Boss Pop. There was 50,000 people. We did 35,000 at Pori Jazz Festival. That was the last one we did. We did the North Sea Jazz Festival with like, you know, 20,000 people. I mean, we're doing it out there on our own. We're doing 8,000 to 10,000, and here we're doing theaters. You know, it's gone way up for us. It's been the best few years we've had in our career in terms of discounting record sales, which
non-existent.
You know what I'm saying? Like a gold record's like a unicorn at this point.
Know,
you know what I mean? But you know, and that's guys like us that are lucky enough to have a live audience. I mean, it's keeping us alive, but it's keeping me on the road a lot.
Yeah. Have you seen people coming to your shows because of the whole Weezer Africa thing?
Oh, sure.
Have you seen a
young
different
people.
Audience?
Young
right,
people.
Younger people.
Oh, sure.
That are coming just because they turned on to Toto through that?
Yeah, it became this thing. I mean, this is a goofy song that we recorded in 1981. We buried it last song on the record. it was a great track, but we were going, these lyrics are ridiculous. You know, I've said, come on, Dave, you know, and we kind of laughed about it and we thought, well, then it was a hit the first time. We're like, okay, whatever.
You take
a number one record whenever you can get it.
Right.
But then you get bagged as this kind of a band. You know what I mean? You know, you're this, or you're not really a rock band. If you saw us live, you'd have a different view of what we do. Yeah, sure, that's a part of our thing, but there's a whole other side of us than people that don't know us aside from three or four songs. You know, those guys suck. They don't know how to rock. Okay, fine. But if you don't know. But anyway, to make a long story short, we were doing festivals in Australia right after Christmas last year. And it was like 15 to 25-year-old people. I'm going to go, oh, man, I don't know how we're going to go down over here, man, because they only know the song, you know, and it's a thing. Okay, they want a, you know, party song, whatever it's become to younger people. And then we went out there and played for real, and they freaked out. It's like they'd never seen it before, because a lot of those people, honestly, it's all tracks, and even the lead vocal is just mine.
Oh, don't get me started, man.
You know,
it is my biggest issue in rock right now. I am speaking out on it. I am calling it out. It is sickening. I am tired of hearing people say how great a band sounds.
Well, now it's there. Now cats are even doing the lead vocal.
It's got to stop. It's insane.
It's ridiculous.
Well, you know what I'm doing.
Now they've got these whole people online. Did you see him lip sync? Did you see so-and-so? Look at, you know, 1 minute and 38 seconds.
Putting
not
up
even
waveforms
close.
Of the exact vocal the same night in and out. It's ridiculous. And here's the thing about it, Steve. Here's the thing. I got this whole plan. I was speaking to Kiefer. I was talking to him about it because he's all real, too, and he's all
well,
real.
Well, understand. I mean, I've been on both sides of this.
Well, I'm
at
sure
one
you
point,
have been.
We had a singer that couldn't sing, and we cheated for a minute. And it really didn't help my drinking problem at the time. It's been 10 years, but, you know, I mean, at the time, I felt like I was being pantsed on stage. I felt like I was cheating on people, but there was no other way around
it. Snoop's walking by.
I know Snoop.
Oh, if we could get Snoop to come in here and say hello on the air, that would be awesome.
Oh, I don't know him.
I don't either, but I would love to.
There's been a Snoop sighting.
Snoop is what? Snoop has got people. Wow.
Yeah, he does.
Snoop has got it on.
But you know what? He was really sweet. Look me right in the eye and smiled.
I would love. Oh, Alex, you should see if Snoop would come in.
He's going over in the Shade 45 right now.
Alex doesn't even want to walk in. There's like literally 15 people in front of. Oh, I see the huge dude. He's bringing up the rear.
Yeah,
the one good dude. Dude is huge.
You could run at him full speed and he wouldn't even feel you. But he smiled. There's really friendly people, so don't get the wrong impression out there.
I wouldn't give that impression at all. I'm just saying it's a big man. Yeah.
The whole cheating thing. I'm really a stickler about all that. You know what I mean? It's one thing to have a sample here or there, but I mean,
exactly.
to have your whole show on. Like, there's a lot of bands that have to sign non-disclosure, and some people you'd be really surprised. There's a whole other workings underneath the stage.
Oh, yeah.
Three different Pro Tools guys in case one breaks, because you get caught with, you know, then all of a sudden you're Milli Vanilli. You know what I mean?
It's insane. It's insane that people are just, either they don't know or just looking the other way. It's insane.
Well,
and here's my deal. I can't play a note or sing a note, but if people keep buying tickets to bands and listening to tracks, I'm going to go out on tour. I'm going to call the band Eddie and the Tracks. Kiefer already offered to write me songs. I'm going to be totally transparent. It's all tracks, and my t-shirt's going to say sounding great exactly
every
the same
night.
Every night.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, because of the technology, people, when I go see shows as kids, there were flaws. You know, I make mistakes. I play the wrong
note. That's what a live show is.
And, you know, vocalists, as good as they are, you screw up, it's a little flat, or you miss something, or you miss a lyric. Now, if it sounds like the record live, it's probably because it is the record
live. Right, but that's what a live show is.
You know, also, if you move away from a microphone, if there's proximity to microphones, you know, if it doesn't fade away when you move away, bullshit.
I love the fade away. Like, we were talking, you mentioned Brad Whitford. I went to see Aerosmith in Vegas, and they fucked up a couple times, and they laughed about it. And Joe and Steven singing into the same mic, and who's a little off mic, that's a live rock show. Yeah. And yeah, they got a couple guys helping them out that they introduced.
Sure,
they're
sure,
live
yeah,
human
man.
Beings.
No, we bring extra musicians and singers and stuff.
Fine.
We you know, enhance the band to pull off our five-part harmonies and shit like that.
Fine.
But if you hear it's not perfect, there's a little rub. Once in a while, okay, the guys are out there doing it. You know?
Yeah, that's the real deal. Hey, we have limited time with you, and I got a few people that want to talk to you on the phone real quick. So I want to grab a few calls.
Just say, get that fucking loser.
No. But before we go to these calls, so can you? You're now. I know you can probably only say what you can say.
What?
But your buddies, we all know your buddies with Eddie Van Halen.
I am.
Can you say anything about Van Halen? Do you know anything about Van Halen?
I love Ed and Alex. Have been friends of mine since for 40 years. I'm still friends with Mike. And
I'm wearing Michael's shirt.
I know, man. Yeah, I mean, I love all those guys. I'm Switzerland, man. I don't get in the middle
but
of all
Michael
that.
But Michael said on this show that they were going to go out this year. Michael cleared his schedule, and he
you know,
Michael
man,
said that.
You know what, man? I got to look you right in the eye and say, like, listen, I've been in contact with Ed. We text all the time. I really can't say much, man.
I'm not going to press
you. No, I think, I mean, you know, I don't want to say anything because, I mean,
We just need that guy out there.
You know,
man,
everybody
so
wants Van Halen back. Nobody more than me, because I still think they're one of the greatest rock and roll bands of all time. And if there was Eddie, changed the planet. You know, him and Al, right. They're laying back and they're you know waiting to see what happens next. I think they're on a hiatus, and you know, there's been some health issues that they're dealing with and stuff like that.
Right.
We're older guys now, you know, and to go on the road and stuff like that, it requires a lot of extra effort in terms of all. As a human being.
Well, I get that. I've said that before, too. I said sometimes people are human.
I don't think there's any drama issues that are keeping them from working right now. And I really don't have... I'm not the guy to say anything.
Right, I know you're not
the spokesperson.
I love them
as like brothers. I love those brothers so much. And we've always had a great relationship. And I'm a big fan. I've also adore them as human beings, you know, so...
Did you first meet Eddie when he came in to do Beat It?
No, we knew each
other.
Before
that?
No, we weren't actually in the same room when that happened.
Oh, really?
Oh, no. Well, I'll tell you that story's in my book. It's a longer story. I don't know if we have time for that. But I met Ed in 1979, there was this thing called the California World Music Festival at the Coliseum Stadium in L.A., and we had our first record out, and Van Halen's first record was out, and, you know, I really wanted to meet Eddie, and... I guess, you know, he liked me or liked what he heard on the radio or whatever, Hold the Line or whatever the fuck it was at the time. And we saw each other, and I was on the side of the stage watching them play. You know, he says, no, he can come up and watch, you know. And I was watching it, and we'd point at each other and stuff like that. And then he called me up on the phone like a couple of years later and said, come by, man, I want to hang out with you. And from that moment on, we bonded for a lifetime friendship. And Alex, too, man, you know, I love those guys, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's why I'm not holding any secrets,
I have
no right to speak of what their plans are.
Right.
I also like Irving Azoff, and I don't want him to call me pissed off for saying anything.
Well, I don't know him personally, but
you've never met Ed?
One time, very briefly.
He's the nicest cat
in
the world, man.
I'm a huge fan, and it's just in 25 years we've gotten so little in terms of output, in terms of music. There's been three records, one of which was a re-record of old songs, in 25 years. So there's such a demand and a thirst for people to have something new from that band and something.
Hey, nobody wants to hear it more than I do.
Yeah, so
you know?
It's such an important time, you know, some of his best years, and we just as fans have gotten so little.
It's only coming
from a place of love.
Well, yeah, of course. You know, let's bring back, you know, I hope they get back on the road soon. That's really all I can say about that. I mean, you know. I don't really have any dirt for you or anything like that. But like I said, I try to be – I run into everybody all over the place because I'm more of an out-and-about kind of guy. But, you know, of course the brothers are very, very close to me, and I cherish that, so I'm going to shut the fuck up now.
All right. We'll get a couple calls on for you. And this is Brent in Kansas. Hey, Brent, you're on with Steve Lukather. Grab those headphones, Luke, so you can hear Brent.
Hey, Brent. What's up?
Hey, man. Thanks. This is an honor. I just wanted to say, and you kind of already stole my my question. I wanted to say that I really enjoyed your first book. I really enjoyed the audio book because you would maybe stop a little bit and throw in a little bit of detail here and there and a little bit of color.
Oh, yeah. I will never listen to that because it just after I did, it's like listening to this. It took me 25 years to get used to my singing voice, and my talking voice is rather annoying to me. But thank you very much.
It's one of the best books. It's one of the best books on Audible, and I wanted to know, are you going to read your second one?
If I do it, as we're still in talks about that right now, yeah, I would. Sure, I would. If people dig it, you know. I mean, I never thought anybody would buy one book when they asked me to do it, and I guess people seem to have resonated with somebody, so it's doing well. So I'm very honored for that. Thanks for reading it. I do appreciate that.
Thanks, Brent. This is Jerry in North Carolina. Jerry, you're on with Steve Lukather.
Hey, Steve. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Jerry. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good.
Can't hear you, man.
Jerry, go ahead, bud.
I really enjoy your music. I just want to know, like, when you guys are playing Rosanna or Africa.
Yeah.
How great is this?
How what? Jerry, we got, you got to come back to us, bud. We can't hear you. This is Triv, who's in Boston. Hi, Triv.
Hey, I have a couple of quick questions. One is, what is your favorite year, Marshall, to record and play with? And also, do you think that any modern amps are as good for, you know, recording and playing out? And also, do you get sick of your old guitars ever and seek, like, inspiration in new instruments, or are you just beyond that,
because
you're
no, man. I mean, you know, nothing like an old Marshall, old school. But you know, I'm playing through Bogner's right now, which the Helios, which I really love, which is sort of a hybrid, hot rodded Marshall that has a lot of options there, and it's a real good roadworthy. I still got my old 59 Burst. I still got some old, you know, 51 Esquire. I got some old guitars, but I love my Music Man guitars. They're sort of like the best of all that. And you know, the Les Paul is really worth a lot of dough, and
are
tearing
you
on airplanes
you
and stuff.
Were you one of those guys that collects guitars?
I was, you know. I mean, when it was affordable, you know. I mean, like I said, I bought my Burst in '79 for $4,000, and my accountant at the time goes, "Why are you spending all this money? You get these guitars." I said, "This is a classic. I got to have it. It's a real one." Matter of fact, I did three shows, the tribute to Les Paul, and the one in L.A., I brought the real one. I was the only guy that had a real 59 Burst up there. Just chugged into a rented Marshall and played it, and everybody was tripping on it. A lot, everybody had reissues.
Wow.
And, you know, because they're afraid to bring them out. My buddy Joe Bonamassa is...
Joe's got a
crazy
collection.
Oh, my God. I mean, yeah. he believes in just, like, I got these guitars, I'm going to play them. And I'm sure he has, like, an armed guards wherever he goes. But
he told me he's got, I think he's got a lockup in Nashville or something. Where
his house.
His own, but he has his own thing.
I shouldn't say this because...
Well, I know where he lives.
He's got vaults and, like, safes and, you know,
I know the
high
house
security.
My friend Keith Nelson used to own that house.
Yes, exactly.
Cherry,
well, that's right near my house.
I
live at the top of the hill. He lives right down, I'm not going to say, but, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Somewhere in the canyon.
I just remember because I went to visit Keith once and I got stuck on his driveway
because
it's a really steep driveway going up.
It is a steep driveway.
But, yeah,
But he turned Keith's studio into a whole guitar room and stuff like that. Joe, I love Joe. One of the great guitar players and one of the great guys of all time.
Yeah, and he's got a great big-time guitar collection.
Oh, my God. I mean, it's like it makes Norm's rare guitars look like, you know,
yeah,
it's something, a little side thing at the thrifty drugstore.
Hey,
no offense, Norm. You got great stuff.
We could talk forever.
We could.
Okay. Anything you want to mention and plug?
No, man. Just come out and see us play, man. It's going to be a while, man. Check it out again. SteveLukather.com or TotoOfficial.com. And Eddie, thank you so much for
anytime,
having me, brother.
Man.
It's
anytime.
Always a groove, man. We got to hang more.
I know. We got to do it. And, you know, I go to L.A. every month.
Well,
and
look me up.
I do a week of shows. I got your number.
Okay, well,
and
look
we'll,
me up.
We'll definitely, I want to have you come and sit a whole show. We'll just, you know.
Okay, man, anytime. It's a great honor to be here. And all you metalheads out there, I love all this. I was just digging the new Slipknot record. So, you know, Corey's
number
a
one
great
album.
Cat.
I just,
you know, I love these guys. I mean, I love all kinds. I can listen to Miles Davis and I can listen to classic rock. I love it all.
And the
thanks
crazy
for putting
thing
up
about Luke is he can play it all, too.
Yeah, well, no.
That's what's even crazier. Well, I had some great times talking to Steve Lukather over the years, and that was a great little drop-by that he did for me, coming by the studio while he was on tour with Ringo Starr in New York City. Steve Lukather on the Eddie Trunk podcast, and Slash, of course, earlier. I thank them both for the time. Thank you guys for listening. Thanks to Katie Irizarry, who is the producer of the podcast. Remember, follow me on Twitter, Instagram, at Eddie Trunk. And also the fan page on Facebook at Eddie Trunk. And be sure to hit eddietrunk.com. All my appearances are on the homepage. And very important, if you want a shot at going on the mega cruise, I am giving cabins away. You got to enter by the weekend, folks. By this weekend, by Sunday. Get your entries in. It's very simple. Go to my site, hit the contest tab. All the information is there. You may score a free cabin for two on board the Mega Cruise. Check it out and hope to see you on board. I'll see you guys again next Thursday for another all-new episode of the Eddie Trunk Podcast. As always, free Apple Podcasts, podcast1.com. We'll be right back.
everyone, it's Charlie Kirk here, host of The Charlie Kirk Show, the all-new podcast brought to you by Podcast One. This is where I give you the inside scoop on everything you need to know about the biggest news of the week. I'll be sitting down with some of the most important personalities and newsmakers of our time, giving you my no-holds-bar take on what's going on behind the headlines. So skip the fake news and subscribe today for all new episodes every Wednesday, available exclusively on Apple Podcasts and PodcastOne.com.
Vatitos handmade vodka was ice cold, condensation trickling down the copper metal shaker. It's got to be fresh lime, they drawled. Tart, but balanced. They weren't normally this finicky about cocktail hour, but with Tito's, it had to be perfect. Simple syrup, the final ingredient. The sound of shaking filled the room to the brim. For the perfect pour at next week's book club, try the Tito's Gim Literature. Find the recipe at titosvodka.com. 40% alcohol by volume, namely 80 proof, crafted to be savored responsibly.